spiny plates made up a bony carapace on the creature's back, and jointed insectoid limbs bristled from under the shell. Its face was elongated, and its cruel mouth teemed with savage, curved teeth. "It's dead," he said simply. "You certain?" Donna leaned in close. "No pulse, no heart's beating, nothing. Dead, like I said," he added. "So that's it," Donna breathed a sigh of relief. "We can go home."
"Go home?" exclaimed the doctor. "A peaceful specimen from a passive species like this, running amok, killing innocent people? I don't think so."
"But it's dead," she insisted. "It can't hurt anyone now." "It was a host, Donna, for another organism. Something was using its body. It could have moved on or bred. Don't you see? I have to check. Have to get it away from here." There was a low moan behind them. A sailor lay curled in the shadows, clutching a radio microphone. The dog tag round his neck read, "Engel." The doctor skidded over to the slumped form and urgently pressed a finger against his neck. "Weak pulse," the doctor said. "We need to get him to a hospital." Engel flinched slightly. "Don't worry, we're here to help you," the doctor reassured him. Engel's head lolled towards the doctor and his mouth fell limply open and he tried to speak.
"We are not who we say we are."
The doctor looked up at Donna, his face growing pale. "We need to get him help, and quickly." The patrol boat headed back to harbour. Engel lay on deck, swathed in woolen blankets. Donna held his hand. "It's all right, sweetheart. There's nothing to fear." Engel looked up with bloodshot eyes, straining to hear her. "There's nothing." A symphony of underwater sounds began to overwhelm his thoughts. "Too. Fear." A great wave of darkness swallowed him up, and he descended to a place where there was warmth and calm and peace. But still, Donna's words echoed faintly. "There's nothing to fear." And of course there wasn't. He would be fine. He was being looked after. The doctor stood next to Hobbs on the bridge, holding the radio microphone in his hand. "I need to speak to the Vice Admiral urgently." A moment of silence, and then a voice answered. "Jarman." The doctor's heart sank.
"What do you want?"
Jarman sounded bored.
"We have an injured man," the doctor said. "I'm presuming your patient is German."
Jarman crackled in response.
"We're bringing him in now," the doctor acknowledged.
There was a moment of pause. Then, simply,
"No."
"What?" The doctor was outraged.
"I will not have a Nazi on my base."
The doctor bristled with anger.
"You can't do this, Commodore. This man is injured. He needs help." "You heard me, Dr. Smith. I've given you an order."
Then the radio went dead.
"Hello?"
The doctor shouted into the microphone, but there was no answer. Hobbs looked over at the doctor and asked,
"What now, sir?"
The doctor slowly raised his head, his eyes glittering.
"We carry on as planned. This man needs help. Leave me to deal with Commodore Jarman."
Jarman turned to Sharpington, clicking his fingers.
"I said, get me the Ministry of Defence. Come on, come on."
"Sir, they're on the line, sir."
Jarman snatched the receiver.
"Commodore Jarman." "Yes, that's correct. A personnel security check. Dr. John Smith and Donna Noble."
So many people, Jarman mused, needed reminding who was in charge, just who held the real power. And then there was a voice on the end of the phone.
"Really?"
Jarman said steadily.
"Thank you."
He replaced the receiver. Things were starting to fall into place. He took out his gun and checked it. It was loaded.
"Excellent," he thought. "No point in having a loaded gun if you weren't prepared to fire it."
As the doctor was now tending to Engel, Donna crossed to Fosbrook.
"Budge up," she said. "You all right?"
She sat next to him, huddled close in the chill night air.
"Yes," he smiled. "Thank you, ma'am."
Donna laughed.
"Donna, just Donna will do."
"Michael," he added.
"I came to see how you were doing."
"Fine, fine," he nodded. I wondered if, when you got some leave, you might..."
His voice trailed off and he looked down, suddenly fascinated by his fingernails.
"What?"
Donna asked,
her heart suddenly thumping in anticipation. Oh, nothing, he said hurriedly.
Go on,
she prompted. He seemed to be struggling with himself and then suddenly blurted,
Your friend's unusual. You and him seem quite close.
Donna's eyes widened. She clapped her hand to her mouth and stifled a laugh.
We're not... Oh, my God, you think... No way, we're not a couple. He's way too skinny. He's like a beanpole with feet. I'd have to have glaucoma and come from Mars to fancy him.
Oh, right, he said. Right. Just wondered. Donna looked at him and her face softened. Mates. We're just mates. High above them, the fog was beginning to clear. Through the thinning cloud, they could see the faint outline of the moon. Beautiful, isn't it? Fosbrook craned his head back to stare upwards. You've no idea how beautiful it is out there. It puts things into perspective, changes you. She touched her chest. In here. He fixed her with a steady look. I guess you'll be leaving soon. Donna looked away. The two of them sat in silence, listening to the asthmatic chugging of the boat and the surging of the sea all around them.
You seem out of step, like you don't belong here, Fosbrook continued.
I don't... I can't tell you. I wish I could.
What do you mean?
He asked.
We're going to have to go.
When he spoke, it wasn't a question.
You mean for good?
Donna nodded. For a moment, they looked at each other in silence. Then he leant forward, closing his eyes, and kissed her. For a second, she was startled. It was what she wanted, but also the worst thing that could happen. She snatched her head back.
Whoa there, sailor boy, she said.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. He sounded crushed, confused.
Donna gently reached out her hand and stroked his cheek, and for a moment everything between them was all right.
You didn't. But as long as you understand, I'm not staying. I can't. You're a really nice guy. Thank you.
And for the first time since she had boarded the TARDIS, her mind was full of what-if questions. The ancient walls echoed as Mansell, Fosbrook and Hobbs pounded through the tunnels, leading the way as Donna and the Doctor struggled after them with the trolley. The Doctor talked urgently to Engel all the while. It's okay, you're safe now. Engel struggled for breath.
Where am I?
In the naval base in Dover. Donna, water, said the Doctor as they crashed through the doors into the sick bay. His voice was urgent. Think, this is very important. What happened on that U-boat? Engel's eyes widened, as if he was struggling with the memories. Donna held a tin mug to his lips, and he gulped greedily at the chalky water. He looked up, his eyes intense, and said croakily,
Darkness. Crushing darkness.
The Doctor whispered into his ear.
I'm talking to whoever is inside. Listen to me. I've come to take you home. Do you understand? You can trust me. I'm not here to hurt you.
Engel shuddered, his back suddenly arching in a rictus of pain.
The light! He screamed. Too bright!
The Doctor turned to the sailors who now stood guard at the door.
Dim the lights!
As he turned back, the already dim lights became dimmer still, and Engel's seizure seemed to ease. His eyes crashed wide open. When he spoke, his voice was harsh, deep, somehow not his.
We are not who we say we are,
he slurred gutturally. He turned his head to look at Mansell and sneered.
Child!
Mansell shuffled uncomfortably and then suddenly turned and left the sickbay. Donna watched him go, confused at his reaction. Engel's eyes snapped back to the Doctor and a cruel smile crawled across his face.
Why have you followed me here?
Why did you kill all those people? The Doctor asked. There was no need. Wherever you've come from, I can take you back there.
Engel smiled, and his eyes rolled up into his skull.
What's he doing?
Donna asked.
He's shutting down, the Doctor said. He's closing himself off.
The Doctor put a hand on Engel's forehead, spreading his fingers, pressing them lightly against his temples. Donna leant in.
Is that like Vulcan or something?
You really do watch far too much telly. I need to get inside his mind, try to reach him.
He repositioned his fingers and closed his eyes once more. She turned and crept softly out into the corridor where Mansell hid in the shadows, shivering.
You all right? She asked. My name's Donna.
Donna Noble. You got a name? Mansell flicked nervous eyes towards her. It's Barry Mansell. There was an uncomfortable silence.
So?
He looked at her uncertain, then blurted out. How did he know? I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't. I lied. I'm only 15, miss. You won't tell anyone. Am I in trouble?
Donna smiled softly.
No. No, you're not. Come here. She hugged him for a moment, suddenly feeling very old.
For what it's worth, she said, I'd never have guessed. Look at me.
He stepped back, wiping the tears from his cheeks.
You're a very brave man.
My granddad, Wilf, did the same as you, joined up before he should have done it, and he's just brilliant, like you.
Mansell smiled, coyly, embarrassed.
Your granddad? Was that the First World War?
Nah, the second. She quickly corrected herself. No, you're right, it was the first one. Yeah, it was yonks ago.
Phew, she thought. Managed to rescue that one.
When the doctor opened his eyes again, he found himself looking down the barrel of a gun.
You brought a Nazi into my base, Jarman sneered. Is he one of your X-Files? He's sick. He needs urgent medical attention. The world would be a much safer place with one less Nazi in it, said Jarman, relishing the opportunity to pontificate. Maybe we should have him shot. What do you think?
He swung round, pointing the pistol at Engel's forehead.
What? You call this civilized? Four words, Jarman. Over my dead body.
And as he spoke, the doctor moved between Jarman and Engel. Jarman cocked his gun. There's only one word I know for a man who helps Nazis, Jarman spat.
Judas. Commodore, I'm treating him, the doctor said calmly. He won't escape, and when he's fit and well, he can be released into your charge.
Jarman thought for a moment, and then slowly lowered the gun.
Where's Miss Noble? He asked.
The doctor looked round the room, confused.
She was here.
She won't get far, Jarman snapped.
Hobbs, find the girl.
He turned to face the doctor once more.
And you, Dr. Smith, are coming with me.
The doctor sighed impatiently.
I can't. This man is dying. Then he needs a man of God, not a man of medicine, said Jarman. I'll send the chaplain down.
He gestured with his gun towards the door.
After you, doctor.
Jarman slammed a teleprint down on the plotting table.
No record of a Dr. John Smith. Anywhere. Not in military records, not at the MOD.
Vice Admiral Ramsay spoke quietly.
Doctor, I need to understand why you lied.
The doctor took a deep breath.
Because you're not ready for the truth.
I'm listening, Ramsay said.
We were tracking down a creature, the doctor said, a creature of immense power. All it wants is to consume, to breed. It's alien.
Ramsay asked, matter-of-factly,
Alien? I'm assuming you mean not from Great Britain. I mean not from this planet. You saw it arrive with your own eyes. Gentlemen, please, I am not lying. I'm here to save your world.
This is the man who needs the last rites? Asked the chaplain, standing beside Engel.
That's right, sir, Foswick said.
Would you mind leaving us alone?
Clayton sat and felt for Engel's hand and held it in his. He bowed his head. A chill breeze began to whistle through the sick bay, blowing papers and charts. Suddenly, Engel sat bolt upright on the bed. He opened his eyes, now dead, black voids. Clayton sensed movement next to him.
Is everything all right? He asked softly.
Engel swung his legs off the edge of the bed and stood up, his lips pulled back over his teeth.
Nothing to fear.
Clayton smelled carrion in the air and panic began to surge inside him.
Nothing to fear,
intoned Engel once more.
What do you want?
Clayton asked. There was silence. Clayton crossed himself and began speaking in a hushed voice.
Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. He heard another noise. To his right, Clayton spun towards the sound.
Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread.
Another scuffle. Behind him now. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Powerful hands grasped the old man's head, held him firm. He cried out, struggling. Engel smiled, and he opened his mouth wide, dripping a black, inky gloop. The slippery, translucent head of a creature appeared from inside his throat with tiny, furious black eyes. It opened its mouth, revealing row upon row of impossibly sharp teeth nestled within. The chaplain screamed as something wet and cold suddenly coiled around his throat and then sank its teeth into the back of his neck. At that same moment, Fosbrook walked back into the room.
Vice Admiral, please, you see things. You have instincts. You know I'm right, the doctor pleaded.
Jarman smirked as he noisily stirred his tea.
Sir, we have 400,000 men depending on us and we're wasting time with this man's fantasy.
Ramsay looked at the doctor.
Get me proof. Absolute proof.
Exasperated, the doctor produced the sonic screwdriver and pointed it at Jarman. The tip of the screwdriver glowed vivid blue. Almost instantly, Jarman's mug exploded in his hand, vibrated to tiny pieces, showering him with hot tea.
For crying out loud!
Jarman yelled. Smiling wryly, the doctor put away the sonic screwdriver.
Alien technology, Vice Admiral, he said. Fairground japes,
Ramsay retorted.
Okay,
the doctor put his arm round Ramsay's shoulder and leant in conspiratorially.
There's something I'd like to show you.
Oh, yes, the doctor beamed. Home sweet home.
Everything was still a bit wet, but at least the force field around the TARDIS had kept the majority of the seawater out. He leant against the console.
What do you think?
Ramsay stood in the doorway, his mouth open.
But this is madness.
The doctor bounced down the ramp towards him.
Bonkers, but touch it, it's quite real.
Ramsay reached out a tentative hand and prodded the coral-like column.
I've never seen anything, ever, like this.
The doctor thrust his hands in his pockets and pouted out his bottom lip.
Well, you wouldn't have. It's alien. I'm an alien. This is my alien ship.
Ramsay struggled for words.
But it's bigger.
Yes, the doctor chipped in quickly.
How?
The doctor smiled. One day I'll get a leaflet printed. Frequently asked questions save so much time.
I always knew,
Ramsay leant back against the coral column, deep in thought.
I always knew we weren't alone. I spent so much of my life immersed in our history, Doctor, always looking back to the past. I never looked forward to the future.
Too late now. It's all passed me by. I'm constrained by protocol and codes of behaviour.
A dinosaur.
And I'm as guilty as the next man of refusing to let go of the past. It's a safety net for the timorous and fearful.
But you're brilliant, you are,
the doctor said passionately. History remembers people like you. Trust me, I know these things.
You're very kind, said Ramsay modestly. This Nazi evil is spreading and I'm trying to protect my people. I'm not sure I have the strength anymore.
The doctor raised an eyebrow. Wait till you're 903.
903, you say?
Yup. Ramsay nodded sagely.
The arthritis must be hell.
The doctor smiled.
Your men need you. You're the still point in an ever-turning world. They'll fight with you, but you have to lead them.
Ramsay's eyes suddenly seemed alive once more.
Thank you, Doctor. You're right.
There was a pause.
Please never breathe a word of this. I'd be the laughing stock of my club.
The doctor leant in close.
Oh, Bert, your secret's safe with me.
As Donna and Mansell walked back into the sickbay, Fosbrook was crawling sluggishly to his knees, clutching his head. Donna immediately rushed to help him. He slumped gratefully into a chair. Donna looked around the room.
What happened?
Clayton. I think he killed Engel, then he belted me.
Fosbrook coughed.
Just stood there. Ruddy belted me.
He can't have got far. Barry, see if you can find him.
As Mansell turned to go, she grabbed his arm.
Oi, be careful.
He nodded and smiled at her, then raced from the room.
Ooh,
she said, gently prodding around the cut over Fosbrook's eye. Nice bruise coming up. You won't have a scar, though. Sorry to disappoint you. Fosbrook winced. Donna laughed.
You big girl.
A sudden, strident alarm blared from the corridor. Heart-stopping, urgent. Donna was from another time, but she'd heard this sound before. It was an air raid siren. The tunnels echoed to the clanging of the giant metal doors as the lockdown swung into force. The doctor cocked his head to one side, listening. As the wail of the siren began to subside, he could hear the faint drone of Luftwaffe bombers, which penetrated down even to the operations room. Jarman's eyes were fixed on the doctor as he spoke quietly into an internal telephone. "I want you to come to the operations room." A high-pitched whistling noise and then an almighty explosion far above, so loud it sent shockwaves through the base. Another distant thumping joined the cacophony outside, and the doctor guessed it must be anti-aircraft guns firing on the Luftwaffe. "How long is this likely to last?" he asked. "Until their payload is empty," said Ramsay. "That's the usual form." The door to the operations room swung open, and Sharpington crossed and whispered to Jarman. A moment later, Jarman unholstered his pistol and aimed it at the doctor. The doctor looked perplexed. "What?" Jarman's eyes blazed. "The Germans know we're here, just not sure where exactly." He looked at the doctor. "Or maybe they do. This man says you attacked him, Dr. Smith." "What?" The doctor was utterly bemused. "I've never seen that man before in my life." Ramsay looked bewildered. "Jarman, what the hell are you talking about?" "This man," Jarman pointed at the doctor, "attacked one of my ratings and forced him to send the grid reference of the war tunnels to the German fleet." "I did nothing of the sort," the doctor protested. "Vice Admiral, you've got to believe me. I wouldn't do that." The doctor glanced at Jarman and caught the shadow of a smug smile before the Commodore hurriedly blanked his face. The doctor began clapping slowly. "Oh, well done, Commodore. I really didn't see that one coming." Ramsay turned to Jarman. "You've been under a lot of pressure recently. I'd understand if maybe you'd made a mistake." Jarman snorted contemptuously. "There's no mistake." Ramsay bowed his head and took a deep breath. "I'm sorry, Doctor. Under the circumstances, I have no alternative. You'll be held in a secure place until such time as we can investigate." "The man should be executed," snapped Jarman. "Have him shot like the dog he is." The doctor suddenly held up his hand. "Shh, everyone quiet." He looked slowly up towards the ceiling, tilting his head slightly to one side. "Everybody get down," he yelled. Suddenly, silent white light filled the world. Time seemed to stop for a moment, and then a wall of flame blew the doors to the operations room inwards, and the air filled with whirling hooks of shrapnel. A burning rafter fell from the roof, showering hot sparks and sending arteries of flame across the floor. A splintered pipe gushed water from the ceiling. The room was plunged into blackness. Far above, the brick arch at the entrance to the war tunnels collapsed as masonry and rocks from the cliffside tumbled down into an immovable pile. The entrance was sealed. Tight. The doctor scrambled awkwardly to his feet and looked desperately across at Ramsay, who was half buried under a fallen beam. He heaved it up with both hands and threw it to one side.
"Ramsay!"
he yelled. He felt for a pulse, but there was only a very weak one. The doctor hurriedly snatched out the sonic screwdriver. Activating it, he began to scan Ramsay's body, checking the readings on the side panel.
"Heart palpitations," the doctor said through gritted teeth. "You are not going to die on me."
Immediately he began to switch settings on the screwdriver and he pointed it directly at Ramsay's chest.
"Come on, come on!" yelled the doctor.
The sonic screwdriver buzzed, penetrating deeply into Ramsay's chest, the sound waves beginning to regularise his rapidly fluctuating heart. The two slowly began to beat in time. Ramsay suddenly took a sharp intake of breath, sucking in dry and dusty air, making him cough and splutter.
"Oh, yes!" cried the doctor triumphantly. "You tried to kill him."
The doctor spun round. Jarman stood behind him, the pistol in his shaking right hand.
"You tried to kill us all."
The doctor stood up to face Jarman.
"Real people have died today, and more will die unless you stop this stupid crusade."
Jarman pushed the barrel of the gun into the doctor's forehead.
"I was saving his life," the doctor shouted. "I was getting his heart rate back to normal." "I don't want to hear it," said Jarman. "Leave him."
Ramsay weakly pushed himself up onto his elbow.
"I said, leave him." "He was trying to kill you. I saw him. I stopped him," shrieked Jarman. "And now I'm going to have him shot as a traitor."
He clubbed the doctor across the back of the head with the butt of his pistol, and the stunned doctor sagged into his arms. Jarman began dragging the doctor into the corridor. Ramsay gripped the side of the blotting table and hauled himself to his feet. Showers of sparks rained down behind him from the ceiling. The doctor, giving away the location of the war tunnels, he didn't believe it for a moment. What he did believe was that Jarman was a danger to himself and others and had to be dealt with. Ramsay was alone. No troops to do his bidding. Just him.
All right, then. Time to act.
Donna felt her forehead being dabbed with a cold, wet cloth.
Are you all right?
Fosbrook was cradling her in his arms. She smiled, then winced.
I've got a real craving for a kebab.
There was a scuff of footsteps in the corridor and Mansell appeared in the shattered doorway carrying a torch.
I found him, he said simply. You're kidding?
Donna asked. Fosbrook helped her unsteadily to her feet. Mansell grinned. I managed to miss all the fun. I was in the plant room, foot-thick concrete walls.
The plant room? Fosbrook asked. Why?
Clayton. That's where he went. I followed him down there. He didn't see me, though. Donna began brushing dust and grit off her clothes and turned to Fosbrook. Can you take me down there?
Yeah, of course.
Together they stumbled over chunks of fallen masonry to the doorway. And Barry, can you find my friend the doctor? Bring him to the plant room. Mansell grinned and disappeared. Fosbrook turned to Donna.
What the hell is going on?
I think it's time we had a little talk, she said, as they headed into the darkness. Jarman dragged the semi-conscious doctor along a darkened tunnel, shouting wildly for help. Several disorientated ratings appeared in the tunnel.
Sir?
Jarman threw the doctor's body towards them.
Take him to the cells!
The muscle in the corner of his eye twitched spasmodically. I am going to enjoy this, he thought. In the cells, too, water poured from cracked pipes above. Jarman crossed the wet floor to where the doctor had been thrown in a corner.
Wake him up!
They began splashing water on the doctor's face, and he spluttered back into consciousness, coughing. He stared incredulously at Jarman through bloodshot eyes.
Get him on his feet, snarled the Commodore.
What are you doing?
The doctor asked breathlessly.
Summary execution, Dr. Smith.
The doctor watched as the ratings lined up about 3 meters away from him and began loading their rifles.
You can't do this!
The doctor yelled.
Sorry, Doctor. There's always sacrifice in war, Jarman chuckled.
Donna and Fosbrook tore along a shattered corridor. Lights in the ceiling strobed and flickered and fractured pipes spilled water on the floor below. They threw open a heavy metal door, flashing their torches into the room.
Clayton!
Donna screamed. Her torch beam picked out a shape hunkered over the edge of a water tank in the shadows.
Look!
She nudged Fosbrook, and he too shone his torch at the misshapen form. The chaplain's head swung round to look at them, his furious black eyes glinting in the yellow torchlight.
He can see,
Donna murmured.
What now?
Fosbrook whispered. We keep him talking till the doctor arrives. Clayton beckoned them over.
There's nothing to fear.
I know what you are, Donna said bravely.
Do you?
Clayton smiled, black saliva drooling down his chin.
I am an emanate. This is me,
he said simply, and he turned his back on them. Fosbrook lifted his torch beam, and it picked out a writhing, squirming mass on the back of Clayton's neck. He looked closer and saw what appeared to be a corpulent, pulsating leech attached to the base of Clayton's skull. Its teeth had actually sunk deep into the chaplain's flesh. The creature seemed to be feeding, its obscene, swollen body gorging itself on Clayton's blood. Clayton turned back to face them, and he held his hands out towards them in a welcoming gesture.
Join me. Become part of my brood, he said.
Come anywhere near me, Sunshine, and you'll know about it,
Donna snapped angrily. Clayton laughed and leant over the open water tank.
You will join me, eventually.
Suddenly his body was racked with spasms, and he opened his mouth wide and a thick black ichor began pouring into the water of the tank.
What's he doing?
Fosbrook asked, repulsed. Clayton continued to disgorge sticky black liquid into the tank, and in the poor light, the liquid seemed somehow alive, full of tiny, wriggling creatures.
What's he doing?
Fossbrook repeated. Donna turned to face him, her face grim. He's breeding. Those things are his children. Oh my God, there are thousands of them.
Any last words? Jarman mocked. The doctor struggled to stand upright.
Commodore, you don't have to do this. Oh, but you have absolutely no concept of how much I want to, said Jarman.
He swung to face the ratings.
Take aim!
The doctor closed his eyes and turned his head towards the wall. He stood there listening to the water pouring in a torrent from the cracked water pipes above, and then heard a sudden intake of breath.
Fire!
The Nemanite spawn swirled through the water pipes and bubbled to the surface all around the base, writhing mass of albino leeches suddenly appearing inside lavatory bowls or slithering into sinks and showers. And now they attacked, sinking their hooked teeth into human flesh. Men screamed, desperately trying to rip the slimy creatures from their hands, their faces, but the creatures defied removal, chittering excitedly as they began to feed. Ordinary Seaman Mansell stood among the carnage, his face ashen. Then he turned and ran for his life. The Nemanite invasion had begun. The doctor heard Jarman yell, "Fire!" and braced himself. But there was no gunfire. He opened his eyes. Nemanites were flopping down from the fractured water pipes in the ceiling onto the ratings below, who dropped their weapons, screaming and flailing their arms wildly, trying to pull the snapping creatures from their flesh. Jarman snatched up a fallen pistol and his finger tightened around the trigger. Suddenly his arm was shoved fiercely upwards and the pistol discharged harmlessly into the ceiling. Ramsay stormed past him into the room.
"What the hell is happening here?" he bellowed. "Stay back!"
the doctor waved him away.
"Get out of the water!"
Ramsay looked down at the water pooling by his shoes. A Nemanite was slithering towards him, rearing up on its hind quarters, its mouth open. The doctor stamped down, trapping the Nemanite under his trainer. It writhed furiously, wriggling and bucking under his foot. Jarman clapped the pistol against the creature's head, but the doctor gripped the gun barrel and fixed Jarman with a steely glare.
"Don't."
Jarman relaxed, seemingly heeding the doctor's order.
Then he fired, killing the Nemanite and narrowly missing the doctor's foot.
"No!"
shouted the doctor, jumping back.
"I said don't!"
Jarman wiped the gun on his sleeve, smiling.
"Out! Out! Out!"
the doctor shouted angrily. Ramsay paused and looked at the Commodore in disgust.
"You shame us all."
"We need to find Donna," shouted the doctor. "Then regroup in the operations room. Come on!"
Jarman stood a moment in the doorway, seething with bitterness. Both men would suffer for humiliating him so publicly. He followed them into the darkness. Clayton turned from the water tank, his tiny black eyes glittering in the gloom, and offered his cupped hands to Donna, a mass of baby Nemanites twisting and writhing within, seeming to grow before her eyes. Clayton opened his fingers, and the putrescent black liquid slopped down onto the stone floor, the creatures stretching and rolling within the sticky substance. And they were thirsty. They began slithering towards Donna and Fosbrook as they backed away. Clayton laughed.
Nothing to fear.
Oh, no, you don't, said Donna, kicking out as a creature slid onto her shoe. You all right? Fosbrook said.
Lovely, thanks,
Donna growled back at him. Fosbrook kicked at a metal drum and then began unscrewing the circular lid.
What are you doing?
Donna asked impatiently.
It's fuel,
he shouted.
Brilliant. While we're here, I can fill up my car.
He tipped the drum on its side and fuel began spilling greasily across the floor. The Nemonites hesitated, their translucent bodies now immersed in the pungent liquid. Fosbrook spun round to face the chaplain, pointing his gun at the stone floor.
Nothing to fear. Well, fear this.
He fired. With a whoosh, the fuel exploded into flames. Donna and Fosbrook hurled themselves towards the door as the Nemonite spawn began to pop and explode in the searing heat. Clayton staggered against the water tank, half-blinded. Then, with an almighty roar of defiance, he threw himself through the inferno. Ratings lay spread-eagled across the tunnel floors, their limbs twitching, the slimy tails of Nemonites wrapped around their necks.
Oh, my God! Donna hesitated. Look at them! They're all infected!
Fosbrook grabbed her hand, and the two of them raced down the long slope towards the casement level. Behind them, like corpses rising from the dead, the army of Nemonite-controlled ratings began to open their black, empty eyes, tottering unsteadily to their feet. As the doctor stepped inside the sickbay, his foot crunched on Engel's dried-out cadaver on the floor. He stopped to examine it. It's moved on, the creature that was inside him. Once it's absorbed all the body's blood, it has to move on. It has to feed again. He looked grimly at Ramsay, his brow furrowed. We need to find Donna, quickly. Jarman was frozen in the doorway.
Look,
he said, his voice tremulous with panic. Shrouded in the darkness of the corridor was the shambling shape of a naval rating. Black eyes, dead pools that seemed to disappear into infinity inside the head. Around his neck was coiled the pale, fleshy tail of a Nemonite. More shuffling figures filled the tunnel behind.
Inside, now, the doctor urged.
Ramsay rounded on him.
Doctor, what are those things? What's happening to my men?
The doctor slid his hand through his hair and took a deep breath.
They're humans. Were humans. They're changing into hatcheries for the Nemonites. Those creatures lay their young inside the body and use its natural resources to provide food for their spawn until they're ready to emerge.
There was a soft laugh in the darkness behind him. Clayton stood in the shattered doorway, his face blistered with savage burns. The fat, bluish-white coil of a Nemonite was clamped around the chaplain's neck.
What have you done to my friend? Ramsay shouted. What do you want?
He now belongs to me. Your men belong to me. This world will soon belong to me. Join us. There's nothing to fear.
Shambling figures now filled the doorway behind Clayton, uttering soft, chittering noises.
What on earth is that sound? Jarman demanded.
Echolocation, said the doctor bleakly. Then his eyes lit up suddenly.
Echolocation! Echolocation!
The doctor leapt away from Ramsay and Jarman and began waving his arms frenetically, dancing up and down.
What the hell do you think you're playing at? Ramsay said, confused. Hey, over here! That's it, over here! Look at me! Noise! Lots of noise!
The doctor shouted. He snatched up a tin bowl and started banging it on a metal bedstead. The Nemonites swung their heads to the doctor and began to slowly shuffle towards him.
Interesting, the doctor beamed. Right, okay, brilliant. No idea what I do now.
Ramsay repeated his question.
What the hell are you playing at?
The doctor said loudly.
They're virtually blind. They're cave dwellers. They hunt by echolocation, by bouncing sound waves. So I know it's difficult, but shut up.
Ramsay fell silent, and sure enough, the shambling ratings passed slowly by him without appearing to register his presence. Jarman edged slowly towards the now unguarded door and with a sly smile slipped quietly from the room. The doctor began to back away down the sickbay towards the ward.
Ramsay, get the operations room on the phone. Tell them on my command to set off every alarm and siren they've got.
Ramsay backed quietly towards an internal phone hanging on the wall. The doctor edged away from the advancing Nemonites.
Clayton, listen to me. If there's a vestige of the real Clayton in there, speak to me, please.
Clayton stumbled to a halt and said,
We are too powerful. He is consumed.
The doctor persisted.
The one thing I know about the human species is that they are fighters. So when you tell me that Clayton is consumed, I just don't believe you.
The doctor noisily tipped over a bed to create a barrier between himself and the Nemonites.
You so picked the wrong species, he said loudly. They're passionate, tenacious, determined, and downright argumentative. Don't you just love them?
In the operations room, Sharpington was face down under a sheet of corrugated iron. Lieutenant Hobbs lay crumpled in a corner, his chest rising and falling in shallow bursts. The incessant ringing of the phone slowly filtered into his consciousness, and he began to stir. Ordinary Seaman Mansell crept cautiously along a darkened corridor, his rifle held out in front of him. In the distance, he could hear a phone ringing. Ramsay hung up the phone.
There's no one there.
The Nemonites turned their heads towards him. The doctor banged the bowl again.
Then keep trying, he shouted.
He grinned at the advancing Clayton.
I want you to leave this world. It's that simple.
Clayton inclined his head slightly to one side.
Food, host bodies, darkness. Why should we leave?
Ordinary Seaman Mansell warily entered the operations room. Hobbs was trying to haul himself to his feet. The phone in the corner had begun ringing again.
One warning, said the doctor. That's all you get. That's me being charitable. After that, I will do everything in my power to protect this world.
Huddled in a darkened corner, Ramsay had the phone cupped to his mouth.
Thank God you're there, Mansell, he whispered.
Stand by to turn on every alarm. Fire, evacuation, air raid, all clear, everything, on my word. You understand?
He waved across at the doctor, signalling that he was standing by.
Clayton's parched lips curled up in a terrible smile.
My species is all but dead. I am their angel of salvation. Through me we will live again.
Don't say I didn't warn you, said the doctor. Now! Now, said Ramsay, and all at once there was the most deafening cacophony of sound as Mansell activated every alarm on the base.
The Nemonites began to stagger, disorientated, as their echolocation signals became chaotic, sound waves bouncing randomly. The doctor vaulted the fallen bed, crossed the sick bay and grabbed Ramsay.
Out! Come on, let's go!
He paused.
Where's Jarman?
Ramsay looked around.
The coward left us!
Never mind, the doctor dragged Ramsay into the corridor.
Are you all right?
He yelled as they ran down the corridor. Ramsay grinned.
What next, doctor? We need to regroup. Think this through. You know this place better than anyone. Operations room. Which way?
Mansell had grabbed a first aid kit from the wall. He roused Sharpington, then moved over to Hobbs.
You all right, Lieutenant?
Hobbs grimaced.
I think my arm's broken.
The main door suddenly shuddered. The door handle waggled up and down.
Why is the door locked?
Hobbs asked. Mansell gulped.
Them, out there, keeping them out.
The door shuddered once more. Then they heard a familiar voice.
Mansell, open this door.
Mansell hurriedly complied.
Don't just stand there with your damn mouth open, said Ramsay as he strode in with the doctor. We've got work to do.
He glared around the room.
No Jarman! When this is over, I'll have his job.
He slumped into a seat, exhausted. Hobbs filled him a glass of water.
Here, drink this, sir.
Ramsay gratefully raised the glass to his lips.
No!
The doctor leapt across the room, dashing the glass out of Ramsay's hand where it exploded into glittering crystals on the floor. A tiny Nemonite flapped amongst the fragments at Ramsay's feet. He lifted a leather-soled shoe and crushed it.
Thank you, Doctor, he said meekly.
They're in the water system. Whatever happens, do not drink the water. Any of you.
Ramsay grinned.
just like abroad. Hobbs's mouth was wide open in disbelief. He crouched down to get a better look at the splattered body of the tiny Nemanite on the floor.
What? What was that?
One of Dr. Smith's cave creatures. As Ramsay spoke, the banks of communications equipment suddenly shut down and the emergency lights flickered out. Ramsay's voice penetrated the darkness.
Oh, God. Now what?
The doctor answered quietly. They've shut down the generator.
Why?
Because they can see in the dark, and we can't. Ramsay barked out orders.
We need candles, paraffin lamps, anything to give us light. Quickly, quickly.
Mansell already had a lamp in his hand and put a match to it. As a dim yellow light finally rose in the room, the group breathed a sigh of relief. It didn't last long. There was a dull thump on the door. Everyone froze. There was an ominous silence broken by another thump, then a voice.
Let us in, they're coming!
The doctor flung open the door to reveal Donna and Fosbrook.
Do you think you could have been any slower? She said.
In the darkened corridor, the shapes of Nemanite-controlled ratings shambled clumsily towards them.
Show me your necks,
the doctor yelled.
You what?
Donna exclaimed.
The back of your neck, show me.
Immediately Donna lifted up her hair and turned her back towards him. The doctor quickly felt across the skin of her neck. She was clear. Fosbrook too.
Inside now, he yelled, slamming the door.
Ramsay was fiddling with a communications set.
The radios are down. We can't call for help. Damn them!
Suddenly the doctor seemed to be somewhere else, his face pale.
It's 1940, he asked quietly.
Yes, responded Ramsay impatiently.
1940? And you, Vice Admiral Ramsay, are in the war tunnels in Dover?
Confound it, man, what are you rambling on about? It's May, isn't it? Tell me it's May.
May 26th.
Oh, I'm stupid! The doctor yelled. Stupid as stupid can be. I need a new brain, Donna. I got so caught up in our own dramas, I forgot what was going on here.
Donna looked at him quizzically. I agree with him, she said, pointing to Ramsay. I've got no idea what you're on about.
1940, don't you see?
The doctor grabbed her shoulder, staring at her.
This is history in the making, Donna. Oh, I love it. What happened in May 1940?
He spiralled his hands in front of her face, trying to encourage an answer out of her.
Come on, Donna, think. It's your own planet's history.
She slapped his hands out of the way. Don't do that. I'm not thick, you know. Donna shrugged. Wasn't much call for Second World War history, temping in Chiswick.
Go on then, tell me. Vice Admiral Ramsay changed the course of the war, the doctor gestured expansively. This man, this brilliant, brave man, saved hundreds of thousands of lives. Operation Dynamo. Oh, yes.
Ramsay bristled. That information is still top secret. How the hell? Vice Admiral, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, the doctor added.
Thanks to my grammar school education, I am in fact able to tell the time.
The doctor was bubbling with energy.
Mr. Ramsay, tomorrow morning you have to launch Operation Dynamo. You have soldiers to bring back from Dunkirk. 338,000 to be precise. Bring them back, every single one of them. Move heaven and earth if you must. I promise you, this ends tonight.
Ramsay's head drooped slightly and there was an uncomfortable silence.
What's the matter? The doctor asked.
Ramsay looked up.
There will be no more unnecessary deaths, doctor. We find another way to get those men out of France. I will not risk untrained civilians. I've cancelled Dynamo. Then uncancel it, said the doctor. Without your civilians, Vice Admiral, you'll lose the war. Think about that. Trust your people, because every single one of them is behind you, every battle-weary step of the way.
Ramsay looked at his small force. Just Fosbrook, Hobbs, Sharpington and Mansell. But he knew instinctively, just knew, that they would do anything for him.
Very well, he said finally. We'll do it.
The doctor clapped his hands briskly together.
We need a plan of action. We have to divide up, play to our strengths. We have to be organised, efficient and no heroics.
Ramsay threw off his coat and walked across to the plotting table.
Right, gentlemen.
He began unconsciously mimicking the doctor by clapping his hands together.
We have a plan to get our boys out of Dunkirk. If we speak to HMS Brazen, they can coordinate for us. We're going to need a working radio and power in here.
The doctor chipped in.
I'm going to need power to the sick bay. Can we run a cable there? Fosbrook, run a cable down to the dock, said Ramsay. Find a generator on one of our ships.
The doctor was getting excited now, bursting with adrenaline. If we can get the power up to here, then we can daisy-chain it. Radios first, emergency lights second, sick bay last. Can we manage that? Hobbs said, What about the U-boat? We had it towed into the dock. That'll have more than enough power. Brilliant! The doctor looked at his watch and then said, We've got 30 minutes. We have to be ready to go at 3:30. Donna, I need you organising things here. Why? Where are you going? She asked. I've seen what these creatures can do to a planet, and I'm not about to let them do it here. Okie dokie, everyone ready?
But we're blocked in, sir, said Fosbrook. We'll never get down there.
Then find another way down. Use your initiative, Ramsay barked. Well, come on, get on with it.
Fosbrook turned to Donna. Give me a hand.
Try and stop me, she retorted with a smile.
Ramsay turned to the doctor.
What are you going to do?
The doctor pondered for a moment and then said brightly,
I'm going to bring a little light into Clayton's life.
Thick fog still billowed across the headland, obscuring virtually everything. Fosbrook tied off a rope to the railings on the clifftop balcony as Donna staggered through the doorway, dragging a huge coil of cable. Fosbrook secured one end to a socket in the wall and then tossed the remainder over the balcony. He leant over the edge, watching it unravel as it fell to the ground 10 meters below. Tugging on the rope to check that it was secure, he hopped over the balcony and perched on a tiny concrete lip on the other side.
I've got to climb down there on that thing,
Donna looked shocked.
Unless you can fly, he quipped.
She raised an eyebrow.
Come on then, sailor boy, show me what you're made of.
He winked and hopped backwards off the balcony, dropping immediately from view. She craned her head over the edge. He was expertly descending the rope, hand over hand, until his feet reached the chalky scrub below. He looked up and gave a cheery wave.
Your turn!
Grumbling to herself, she hoiked her leg over the balcony.
Oi, sailor boy, I'm wearing a skirt, so you can avert your eyes. All right.
Commodore Jarman had lain huddled on the bed in Vice Admiral Ramsay's private quarters for nearly an hour now, listening to the terror outside. The screams had gradually become muffled and then finally fallen silent. He felt safe here in the dark, and he could think. Dr. Smith had now assumed charge in his place. He and Ramsay had conspired against him. They had to be punished. Destroyed. He couldn't just go charging back to the operations room, brandishing a gun. He'd have to be much cleverer than that. But whatever he did now, his own safety didn't matter. He had nothing to lose. His son had died at sea, just 19 years of age. And his wife, dearest Elsie, had never been found amongst the rubble in the aftermath of an air raid. There was nothing left that could hurt him now.
I need a safe route back to the sickbay, said the doctor. There's an operating theatre there. I need to get a cable to it. Safest way?
Easily done, doctor, said Ramsay. The sickbay is almost directly beneath this room. There's a network of vertical ventilation shafts that draw air from the surface for the base.
The doctor smiled broadly.
So if I run a power cable down the shaft, I can drag it across into the sickbay.
Ramsay nodded.
We'll need to find you a 50-foot length of cable. Shouldn't be too difficult.
He paused for a moment and then asked quietly.
My men, is there any chance for them?
The doctor stood up and popped his glasses on.
They're good, brave men, Vice Admiral. But, sorry, there's no chance.
Ramsay looked directly into the doctor's eyes.
Good, because we're going to have to kill them all.
The doctor knew that Ramsay was right. His men were already lost. The Nemanites were animating their bodies, and if they stayed on Earth, they would destroy the human race. But they were parasites. If he took them away to somewhere empty of life, he was in turn sentencing them to extinction. But deep down in his hearts, he knew there was no alternative. He had to sacrifice the Nemanite race, and he hated the idea. Through an open grille, Ramsay peered down the dark and dirty ventilation shaft at the doctor, who dangled on a rope below.
You'll find an exit about 20 feet down. Do a left and you're in the sick bay. Good luck.
The doctor tugged at the electrical power cable that dangled beside him and shouted back up the shaft.
Make sure it's plugged in properly. I'd hate to get left in the dark down here.
Ramsay gave him a brief salute and withdrew, replacing the cover on the grill.
What in God's name are you doing?
Ramsay asked, as Hobbs rifled one-handed through the paperwork on Jarman's desk.
Look, sir!
Hobbs slapped a paper with the palm of his hand.
Store's inventory. 13 canisters of HCN in solution.
brought into the base 2 hours ago from that U-boat we found.
Ramsay looked confused.
HCN.
Hobbs looked triumphant.
Hydrogen cyanide. Zyklon B. It's lethal. We empty a canister into the water system.
It suddenly dawned on Ramsay.
And we kill the creatures still in there.
Hobbs smiled.
Within minutes, sir.
Ramsay turned to Mansell.
Young man, I've got a little job for you.
The doctor unfurled the cable cautiously across the darkened sickbay and through the operating theatre door.
Oh, come on, he thought, and began connecting the power cable to the lights.
Mansell shone a torch around the storeroom with trembling hands. A stack of drums stood in the corner labelled HCN. With his heart pounding, he lifted the nearest drum and began to stagger across the room towards the water tank. Mansell's muscles felt like hot putty, but the drum now stood on a steel platform at the side of the water tank. Covering his mouth with a handkerchief, he unscrewed the top of the drum, tilted it, and began pouring the contents into the water tank. The doctor was spread-eagled on the floor of the operating theatre, surrounded by a riotous tangle of wires. He looked at his watch and scowled. 3:20 in the morning. This was taking far too much time. He had to hurry up. Donna took a deep breath and stepped onto the conning tower ladder. Straining with the effort, she began to haul the cable up the slippery rungs.
Come on, Donna, while we're young, Fosbrook yelled from above. I am climbing one-handed, in case you hadn't noticed.
Fosbrook reached a hand down towards her and she stretched up to pass the end of the cable to him.
Got it,
he shouted, and he dived into the open hatchway, dragging the cable behind him down into the U-boat. Donna pulled herself to the top of the ladder and sat breathlessly on the cold metal. She looked at her watch and cursed.
It's 3:25, she shouted into the hatchway.
There was an eerie quiet in the operations room, broken only by the ticking of a clock and Ramsay's finger drumming impatiently on the plotting table. Then suddenly the main door heaved in its frame, juddering under some enormous impact from the other side. Ramsay immediately trained his gun on the door.
This is it, he told his men. Mark your target, preserve your ammunition, short controlled bursts.
A metal grill in the wall began rattling violently.
They're in the ventilation shafts,
Hobbs yelled and fired 3 rounds in swift succession. From behind the grill came the high-pitched chittering of an injured Nemonite. A small internal window shattered and a blood-stained human hand reached into the room. Sharpington leapt over to it, hitting it with the butt of his rifle until it withdrew. The main door began to lever upwards, dust cascading from the edges of the frame. A face appeared behind the ventilation grill and a fist punched hard at the slats. The grill exploded out of the wall and a rating began to haul his body through the ragged hole. Ramsay raised his pistol and aimed.
I'm sorry, son,
he said, and fired. The rating twitched spasmodically and pitched forward to the floor. Sharpington stood by the internal window, eyeing the gap carefully. Suddenly, a shape burst from the shadows, grabbing him by the jacket and hauling him towards the window. As he tried to twist himself free, he felt a sudden burning, stabbing sensation and fell to the floor, clutching his neck. Hobbs raced across to him, firing into the window and began to drag Sharpington away as the rating slumped back into the shadows. As more shambling ratings gathered behind the shattered window, Ramsay kicked open a metal cupboard, dragged out an ammunition box and grabbed a grenade. He pulled the pin and tossed it through.
Fire in the hole,
he shouted and dived behind the plotting table. A pinpoint of magnesium bright light flared outside the window as he fell. Choking and flash-blinded, he hauled himself to his feet. He rubbed his eyes gently, coaxing the sight back. And peering through the dust, he saw that the blast had destroyed the attacking Nemonites.
Now he was angry.
Commodore Jarman smoothed the creases of the Vice Admiral's spare uniform and admired himself in the mirror. Not a bad fit, he thought, and so much more appropriate. Only an honourable man should be allowed to wear this. He took Ramsay's spare hat and slipped it onto his head. Puffing his chest out proudly, he saluted himself in the mirror.
Good work, Vice Admiral.
Gently he brushed the tips of his fingers across Ramsay's possessions, finally stopping at a wind-up gramophone. Tenderly he placed the needle on the record and began to crank the handle. The sweet angelic tones of Ave Maria began to fill the room. He crooked his head back and breathed deeply. His wife's favourite piece of music. Vivid memories of her flooded back. His eyes brimmed with tears and the anger within him boiled to the surface once more. He knew his heart had become cold, and he knew he was consumed with hatred. Of the Nazis, of the war, of his sidelining by the Navy, but now most of all, of Ramsay and this doctor. The men who had publicly exposed his weakness for all to see. But whatever his weaknesses, he now had control. As he increased the volume, the music swirled, the heavenly sound echoing through the war tunnels. He picked up a bunch of keys from the desk and dropped them into his trouser pocket. He paused. This bit, so beautiful. He closed his eyes, carried away by the music. In the control room of the U-boat, Fosbrook knelt in front of an electrical panel surrounded by wires. Donna had joined him and now looked at her watch impatiently. Don't mind me, but do you actually know what you're doing? The basics, yes, enough to do this in English, but this is all in German. The labels, look at them, I can't understand a word. And the wires, it's a security thing, but they're all the same colour. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. Donna laughed. Don't talk daft, that's not German, that's English. It's there, in front of your face. He scowled. I haven't got time to joke. The TARDIS, she suddenly exclaimed. What?
Oh, my God, I bloody love you, Doctor, she yelled at the top of her voice.
What are you talking about? The TARDIS, our ship thing, it translates for us, for the passengers. I don't know how it does it, but it does. It gets inside your head, sorts things out, makes you able to understand stuff, she gabbled. Her finger tapped a metal label on the control panel. You think this label is in German?
Course it is, Fosbrook snapped.
But it's not. Not for me. I can read it. It says auxiliary power. She grabbed his arm and laughed. This one says live. This one says neutral. This one says emergency generator.
I love it when a woman talks technical, he beamed.
Donna casually brushed the hair from her face and smiled to herself. Works for me, able seaman.
Done, said Fosbrook, almost incredulously. We need to turn the power on at the switching box. Topside, now!
Ramsay and Hobbs faced the shattered doorway, guns at the ready. But nothing moved in the gloomy depths of the corridor.
Do you think there are any more?
Hobbs whispered.
Bound to be,
Ramsay muttered.
How much ammunition have you got?
I'm out. Need to reload,
Hobbs answered.
You might have to do it for me, sir. Only one work in hand.
Behind them, Sharpington tottered uncertainly towards them, and as his feet scuffled on the rubble-covered floor, Ramsay turned slowly round to face him.
Lieutenant, he said quietly.
Hobbs spun round. Sharpington opened his mouth, drooling black slime.
Sir, back away, very slowly,
Hobbs said softly.
Good job you said that. I was planning to go and dance with the damn thing, snapped Ramsay.
Sharpington hissed at them, and then lurched backwards, away from them.
What's he doing? Where the hell is he going?
Asked Hobbs, as Sharpington shuffled out into the corridor. Then suddenly Ramsay realised.
The U-boat! He heard every word we said. It knows what we're up to. We have to warn Fosbrook and Miss Noble.
How? The radios are down!
But Ramsay was already rooting around in the ammunition cupboard again. Snatching a flare gun and several cartridges, he raced from the room with Hobbs close behind. As the two men burst out onto the balcony, they caught a glimpse of Sharpington toppling over the edge down into the bushes below. Ramsay was feverishly fumbling with a flare gun, cursing himself.
Get a move on, you old idiot. Come on, man, come on.
He stood at the railings and aimed towards the dock.
Stand back!
He yelled to Hobbs. He fired. Hobbs strained his eyes against the fog, desperately trying to see how Fosbrook and Donna had responded. Ramsay was impatiently drumming his hands on the railing and he suddenly shouted,
Don't just stand there like lemons, get a move on!
They can't hear you, sir, Hobbs yelled. They're not moving! Fire again!
Donna and Fosbrook both looked up from the top of the conning tower as a sparkling red flare hurtled out of the fog from the cliffside towards them. Donna felt the heat as it shot past into the sea.
What are they trying to do to us?
Donna and Fosbrook watched in confusion as another flare swooped low over them. Then, as the eerie red glow washed over the quayside, the shambling figure of Sharpington lurched out of a thick veil of drifting fog below them.
"Inside! Now!" screamed Donna.
They slammed the hatch behind them, but the thick power cable prevented them from shutting it completely. Fosbrook held desperately onto the locking wheel as Sharpington began pulling from above.
"Find something to tie it shut!"